Welcome to El Paso Food Voices. I'm Meredith Iabarca. Today's episode on the sense of belonging, tortillas and roti, is part of El Paso Food Voices' special feature on culinary heritage and culinary kinship. This special feature is the result of a class project for a graduate seminar that I'm teaching called Mapping Culinary Narratives. My students and I came together and decided to create what we are calling an audio documentary on the topic of culinary heritage and culinary kinship. Today, they're going to speak to us about this notion of belongingness, specifically talking about roti and tortillas, and how that is connected to this notion of heritage, culinary heritage, and culinary kinship. So three of my students are here to address this topic, and they are Renuka, Jake, and Anna. So I want to thank you for participating in this audio documentary that we're creating. Welcome to El Paso Food Voices.
Thank you, Dr. Abarka. I'm Renuka Khatiora, and I'm from Kathmandu, Nepal, currently staying in El Paso.
And what are you studying?
I'm in the second year of my PhD program in rhetoric and composition.
Welcome to El Paso.
Thank you.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Jake Pineda. I'm currently an English teacher, and I also do here reside in El Paso, Texas.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ana Munoz. I am also a teacher, been teaching for a couple of years, and I reside here in El Paso and have done so for, I guess, more than half my lifetime.
Okay, so this is home.
Yes. This is home. Yes, it is.
So, Renuka, walk us into this notion of belongingness.
Mm-hmm. Belongingness in diasporic situation is triggered by different factors like news from home, festive times, making and preparing food here in El Paso, which we used to make in our homeland.
And just to add a little bit to what Renuka is saying, with this conversation, we wanted to introduce this topic of belongingness and what it means to us. How can we return to our home just because we are from three very different places and we have found ourselves here in El Paso? And through this particular class that we took with Dr. Abarca, we came into this realization that belongingness has a deeper meaning. And this deeper meaning is connected to food, the foods that we eat and the way that we eat it, and this experience that creates belongingness. So, Jake.
Yeah, and if you look at the people that are in our group, we're all from very unique places that are all around the country. I mean, we have Renuka here from Nepal. We have Anna that actually lived half her life in Mexico, and then me, born and raised here in El Paso, Texas. So all of us have actually been in situations like Renuka mentioned, as far as diasporic situations, but all of that fuels into a sense of belonging that Anna was talking about through the foods that we eat. So we all have different experiences where we've been in those situations and how the food actually created senses of belongingness for us and in the way that we ate, prepared, so on and so forth.
Yes, so belongingness is actually truly individual, right? So when I am really in pressure and to release the pressure from the university assignments and classes, I enter...
Not in this class, right?
No, never this class.
So this class is quite interesting because means food is a medium through which we can release our pressure. So whenever I am in, let's say, pressure of the assignments or any other works related with my study, then to release the pressure, I just go to the kitchen. And going in the kitchen in El Paso takes me to the kitchen in my hometown.
How?
So whenever I prepare food, which I used to eat in my homeland, with the aroma of that food and with the process I involved in making the food, like gathering food, preparing to make it, all these processes get me back toward the memories. So in this sense, I can say food also triggers memory. It plays a significant role in triggering memories. And food does not trigger memory, but It also is symbolic in a sense that I feel a sense of belongingness with the native food that I make here in El Paso.
Well, like, what is one food in particular that brings you back?
Yeah, like
you were
an example.
As a student, means I don't have much time to prepare food for myself. So generally, I prepare roti, which is like a slightly, it looks like tortilla. So actually, I never liked roti back in my hometown. Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about roti. So roti is a very common food in Nepali households. It is made with mixture of flour, generally with wheat flour, and then mixing it with water. And then we have to leave it for rest for a while. And then with the help of rolling pin, we have to flatten it. And then it is heated in pan called tawa in our language. So the best part of about roti is it goes with anything, because you can make plain roti, you can make roti with butter also, you can have roti with tea, or you can have it with anything, any like vegetables. So the best part about this roti is it goes with everything. But I never used to like roti. I remember how I used to throw tantrums to my mom when roti used to be cooked. I used to scream, and I remember mince. So remembering about roti, it gives me pain.
Pain?
Yes. I remember how I used to throw my tantrums to my mom, because it used to be cooked, and I never liked roti. And I remember I remember how I used to torture her. I remember how I used to sleep without eating it. And whenever now, whenever I make roti, all these memories come in front of me.
So let me ask you. So if you did not like roti mm-hmm. in Nepal, now that you live in El Paso, why do you make roti?
So as I told you, it reminds me how I used to be pampered. My mom used to call me to take... generally, the roti used to be cooked as our dinner. So she used to call me to take my dinner. And I remember her warmth, how she tried to convince me. And I also prefer to make roti now because my dad, he is a diabetic patient, and he was forbidden to eat rice. So he has to, means he still has to eat roti in his diet. So he has to forbid rice, and I used to love rice. My father also used to love rice, but because of his medical condition, he had to depend on roti for his survival. So, my dad is so much connected with me that if I eat roti, then he would eat it.
So if I hear you correctly, then in terms of when you talk about belongings and especially in a diaspora setting. Mm-hmm. So if I'm hearing your story correctly, is that even though you did not like roti as a little girl or even as an adult living in Nepal, the fact that you are thousands and thousands of miles away mm-hmm. from home, mm-hmm. roti is really a symbolic action of eating mm-hmm. because it reminds you of your mother's warmth. Mm-hmm. It connects you symbolically with your father mm-hmm. about eating center. Am I correct? Is that what you're
yes,
talking about?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think it's very mind-blowing. And it goes back to what we mentioned earlier, right? The whole concept of our conversation, finding this sense of belonging, of identity, of recapturing a part of ourselves through the memories that are evoked by by food, by the things that we eat, even if we find ourselves so far away from our homes, like you, Ranuka, away from Nepal. I know Jake was born and raised here, but when he tells us his story, he has also been away from his physical home. And for me, I was born somewhere else and raised somewhere else. And whenever I eat something that reminds me of home, I just, it's very similar to your story, you know, but yeah, I think it's just so crazy.
And you mentioned that you have a similar situation. So would you care to share your example as well? Cause I know you have a certain food item that kind of gives you that sense of belonging as well.
Yes. So, just in line to what, Renuka was mentioning, she mentioned roti, and for me, it's very similar with tortillas. And tortillas just take me back to my home, because even though it's a staple of Mexican cuisine, it's not just because of that. It's just that growing up in Ciudad Juarez, there was a time, like around 2010, where there were a lot of issues within the city, right? A lot of criminal activity, and a lot of the people that were living in the city were really affected by this. And my family in particular, there was one time where our house was robbed. We came home from work, from school, and the door was just open. Like, you could tell that somebody had broken in, and I was really scared. And I told my mom, like, I can't go in. And it was just the two of us in that moment. So we went in together, and it was just ransacked. You know, we had lost everything that we had saved up, you know, you name it. They even took the food, which we thought was so odd. Like, the fridge was raided. Wow. Like, there was nothing left in the fridge. And we were just so shocked by that. And unfortunately, we had to leave that house just because we didn't feel safe there. We were like, you know, we can't stay here anymore. And we became homeless for quite a while. We had to stay at this abandoned house, my mom, my dad, and myself, just while we were finding a safe place to stay. And I bring this into the conversation because while we were homeless, one thing that we always had was tortillas. And my mom, just to create the sense of comfort, of safety, she would make enfrijoladas. And I don't know if enfrijoladas is a very well-known dish, just because I mention it sometimes to people and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I grew up eating them.
I know, it's crazy to me too, because I eat them quite often, and they just look at me weird when I tell them, like, well, it's like enchiladas, but instead of a sauce, like a hot sauce, like the spicy sauce made with chiles, you make it with beans, and you mash them up, and I personally blend them just so it's smoother. There's no like nothing, like there's no like, just the sensation in your mouth is different. So we blend it all together and it becomes a sauce, and you dip your fried tortillas into the bean sauce, and then you put cheese in the middle and you fold them, and then you add some more cheese on top, and you can have other toppings if you want, but I'm a classic girl, that's all I put on top, like just cheese. And she would make this dish, and you know, I just felt like there was nothing wrong, right? Like, I didn't feel like we were homeless. I didn't feel like we had just lost everything, our house, the place that I grew up in. And I now, every time that I eat enfrijoladas, whether my mom makes them or I make them or I go out to the restaurant and eat them, it brings back this bittersweetness of what happened to me and these very difficult months when we were homeless. But it also brings this happiness, this joy, because it reminds me of my mom. It reminds me of my dad. And it just reminds me that we were together. Despite all the difficulties, we were here.
Okay, I liked how you said sweet bitterness, right? Mm-hmm. So memory not only brings happiness, but also pain. Jennifer Griffith on Soul Roots, A Journey into Ancestry, Belonging, Food, and Love, talks about how memory does not always bring happiness. So let's take a listen.
I believe, as Brené Brown says, that belonging is indeed the courage to stand alone and to belong to yourself. But I also believe that belonging is a sense of being part of something bigger than yourself.
So as he says, memory does not always bring happiness because longing gives you pain also, right? So in my case, it gave me pain because I longed for those moments.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I like what Jennifer mentions in here. Like, you have to stand alone in these memories and you have to look back, right? Like, it brought you this.
So you need to have courage to go through that memory lane.
Yes, right. Like, you need to have courage. You need to confront it and you need to live in that pain in your case, in my case, in that bittersweetness, and I need to embody it. And it's crazy that the food itself, something that is tangible, something that any person could make, or for you and Roti, any person can make it, it brought you those particular memories back, that sense of belonging. It brought me my food or the food that I made a different sense, right? Like, different emotion and a different sense of being part and feeling home, right?
I think one of the key things to share here too is how we're focusing on, you know, the memories being pain or you know, not pain and being something positive or negative. But I think the whole key here as well is to the sense of belongings comes from the fact that all of us have been in places of diasporic situations. So our settings have come in situations where we're not physically at home, which leads to a bigger question as far as what home is, right? But for us here, I think the situations that we're in where Renuka's away from home, from Nepal, where even though Anna was still in her home, the incident she went through might have put her in a sense where they didn't feel at home. And because of the food items that they've had, there's that sense of belonging that brings them back to that place. I think this is a good example for me to introduce mine as well. You know, my situation was a positive memory through a very difficult situation. My experience that I wanted to share my diasporic situation was when I was actually deployed. I am a veteran and I was in the service. But when I was deployed, I remember quickly realizing and noticing the culture shock of being away from home. Somebody born and raised in El Paso, we don't really see the outside world as much as we do while we live here. You know, it's a melting pot here and there's just so much love and appreciation in El Paso that once you leave here, you kind of start to lift the veil up of what the real world is actually like. So being deployed, you started to see a little bit of, even though in the military, a little bit of oppression, you know, towards minorities and getting certain jobs. And at the same time, my son was born and I didn't meet him till he was 7 months old. So watching him through a screen and everything. Anyways, that's the situation, right? So coming back to the whole issue of belongingness and food, while I was deployed, my parents actually shipped me out a dozen of tamales on dry ice and a can of menudo. And that little moment, I mean, it was all the people from El Paso that just unified. And we talk a lot about and read a lot about, you know, like food being the vessel that kind of brings us that familiarity or that sense of belonging. But some of the things that we also fail to acknowledge is the spectacles and the events that revolve around making the food. And I think that also is a sense of belonging that's created by these diasporic situations. You know, I was gone. I was thousands of miles away from home, you know, just like Renuka is now. And you feel it. You feel not being at home, you know, and that's as easiest as I could put it. So when we got this food, it was a spectacle and it happened to be on a Sunday. Any Mexican knows you eat menudo on Sundays and no other day, unless it's after a quince or something. But yeah, you know, so in this Sunday, we had all of the El Paso people coming together and it was a dozen of tamales, but we cut it up. We shared it. The one pot or one can of menudo that we had, we heated it up. So to the point that we're making, you know, it's not necessarily just the food that gives us painful or positive memories, it's also the experiences and the diasporic situations that we're in, plus the spectacles that go in within the food making. And I think that helps towards the belongingness, but also who we are as people. And I think that's very, very vital to share.
I'm going to interject one thing here, just to put it into the contents of the notion of culinary kinship. Because what I'm hearing you describe here, all those people that got together and ate a little piece of tamal and a
tradition to where now people from El Paso started showing off every other week or so on because, hey, check it out. Look what I got this week. And they started getting their little packages of menudo or any form of food that, you know, made them feel like home.
But to me, that is the notion of forming a culinary kinship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, right. Because we're bringing people together, mm-hmm. and through this, you know, shared moment, this shared experience, because there were certain people that were there that didn't eat, you know, but they got that feeling. And, oh, I remember being at home, and they kind of had that little sense of belonging. And therefore, we did form a form of culinary kinship, because in that moment, we were all together and it revolved around the food that was brought to the table.
And it was probably people that you didn't even know, right, from El Paso, like you were, I'm guessing, shipped out from to boot camp and then to wherever it is that you were mm-hmm. shipped to. But, you know, it really goes back to what Dr. Abarca was mentioning and this idea of culinary kinship, right? People that maybe were from the same city, the same town, us that were from three different places in the world, you know, we ended up in this communal space because of the food that it reminded us of home. And for Jake in particular, these dishes that were part of your culture, and I'm guessing people that also share the same culture, and maybe those that even didn't share that same culture, but found that sense of comfort, of home, of familiarity within this shared space, right?
So, okay, that means in this sense, we can say food is just not food, right?
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay, so Zaini Dorsey, on how food can be a source of intimacy, identity, and vulnerability. She talks about how food is not just a food, but it means many things. So let's take a listen.
Food has always been more than just sustenance for us as human beings. It is rooted in feeling, its visceral nature, a result of both how we physically interact with it and emotionally attach to it.
So food is food in culinary process, but it also creates a world of community, right? So it also, let's say the entire process of making roti, and how sharing the roti with other family members or my friends during the festive season or...
I think it's like you were mentioning, right? You know, when you eat roti with your friends or with the people here in El Paso, or when you go back to Nepal and you eat it with your family or those, you know, people in your community, in the place that you live, it does create this sense of comfort. And like Dorsey was mentioning in the audio that we just listened to, it's not just, food is not just sustenance, right? Like this ability to get this energy out of the foods that we eat. It's about the connections that you make. It goes beyond just the physicality of it, which I think it's a beautiful thing to take from this.
Yeah, also because, I mean, we're talking about community, building together and coming closer. So I think this is a good segue into talking about culinary heritage as well. You know, through that little moment and experience that I shared when I was deployed, the people involved, whether they were from El Paso, whether they were Mexican-American or had any roots as far as, you know, eating tamales or menudo, there was a sense of community in that point, right? And I personally felt a sense of pride that I had never felt before in my life. Growing up here in El Paso, as I mentioned, you're not necessarily blind to it, but we're just so accustomed to it being part of our culture that when you leave, you start to see that there is power in our culture and there's appreciation in what we do. So being out there in this experience of not just culinary kinship, it also created an example of culinary heritage as well, because for me, I felt a sense of pride of the food we were eating, the moment that we shared together, the experiences, but also the culture and the tradition that went into, you know, appreciating these dishes. Very minutely, right? But we appreciated it. We had a moment where we were proud of eating tamales, proud of eating menudo, and explaining it to those people that didn't. So we formed a culinary kinship as well as promoting some sort of culinary heritage as well.
I wanted to mention this idea that we we came up with in class, and we talked about one of the articles that we read, and it's particularly Dr. Abarca's. And if she can talk a little bit more about it, that would be great, just because she's the expert here. And she mentions how food becomes a form of thinking, right, or being in the world. And the stories that people create about their food practices, Jake, like you're mentioning this idea of coming together, right? The experience that you got from being in a different land, in a different place, and through, even if the food was not abundant, just that minute piece of tamal or that scoop of, you know, menudo just made this moment special, right? These practices that we engage with, and if you can add a little more.
Yes, I will frame what I'm gonna add a little more in terms of the three stories that I've been hearing: roti, tamales, menudo, menudo in a can, and frijoladas. Because in terms of how you make roti, when you're talking about, you know, the pan and the rolling, I mean, it made me think about how my mother and I, when I was a little girl, used to make flour tortillas mm-hmm. every morning by rolling them, right? So there's a little similarity also with the mm-hmm. flour tortilla, not just the corn tortilla. So in the process of how to make it, in the process of how tamales are made, even though you're not necessarily speaking about that, but in the process of how your mother always made and moladas, and now you make them, I see in those processes what I'm understanding as heritage. That's the how-to. But I also see this notion of kinship, because I'm reading it or understanding it, as we discuss in class, as something that creates relationships. It's a network of relationships. And network relationships that is connected to issues of obligations and responsibilities and care. And the caring that I hear of you is the caring of being connected to your mother. And maybe that connection that you felt with your mom and your dad, by you making roti now here in El Paso and giving it to your husband and to your son particularly, is a symbolic way of connecting with them, right? When you share it with me as your professor, if who's not for Nepal, we extend that notion of kinship. The same thing with Jake, your experience about sharing this food with the people that could connect to it. You're not necessarily related to each other, but you're connecting to one another. Mm. And when you talk about enmoladas, whether you eat them at home.
Enmoladas.
Perdón.
Enmoladas are pretty good too. Enmoladas are pretty good too, but in particular, my favorites are enmoladas.
But it is all creating the notion of relationships that extends just beyond the house. So I hear in the three stories this weaving in and out of both heritage in terms of practice and kinship in terms of relationships.
I agree, yes.
And it all connects back to the belongingness, right? I mean, that's the main theme here. So we want to have this sense of belonging. I think one of the good points that we can bring up is from a tech talk that I had recently listened to discussing something similar to this. So we'll go ahead and take a listen real quick.
So if there's one thing I want you to take away from today, it's this. Food is more than something we just eat. It connects people. It brings back memories, whether good or bad. And most importantly, it helps you find an identity, even if you don't believe you have one.
So I brought this up because I think it kind of relates perfectly to my personal experience, because at that point, you know, my identity wasn't necessarily clear. And I mean, even now, whose identity is clear, right? But these little moments of experiences or memories that might be painful or not, or situations that we might be going through, or diasporic situations being deployed, they all end up constructing our identity. And in that sense, we have a sense of belonging that kind of pulls us together. But I think the bigger, you know, focus that we all have is these experiences start to shape who we are. What we eat shapes who we are. How we eat it, how we prepare it shapes who we are. And even talking about it shares who we are as people and forms our identity. And in that sense, I think the culinary kinship is very metaphoric now, because it's like symbolic towards everybody, right? Like eventually, you know, there's that grand, you know, cliche scheme that maybe we can all get along one day through our food experiences, right? But I think the bigger thing is that there's a sense of belonging through these miniature examples or these smaller experiences.
And I would say that I would like to think that there is that there's more to that sense of cliche, that there's something more, that we could get along through our food experiences if we ground those experiences more, not so much on the how we prepare this, but on the symbolic aspect of what actually food means. Because one of the things that I've been hearing in all of your stories is there's an emotional connection to food.
Deeply.
And one of the things that I said in the article that you mentioned that I could maybe say a little bit more is that as long as we feed ourselves, because when we eat, we're not just feeding the body, like the number of the sources and clips that you have played for us and the stories that you're saying, we're not just feeding the body. We're feeding memories. We're feeding experiences. We're feeding so much more of who we are. So one of the things that I argue in some of my work is that as long as we can figure out how to eat ourselves, at least for that one meal, for that one bite, we have a sense of belonging and we have a sense of being whatever we happen to be, that we are taking care of that body in our physical body, but also a social and emotional and spiritual body. And I think all of your foods are speaking to some degree about that.
Yes, and one thing in particular that, you know, has stuck with me from our class and our moments together and this conversation too is something that was mentioned in one of the memoirs that we read, Taste Like War by Grace Cho, and it's just a line that stuck with me, and I just love it. It's just one of my favorites, and if I want to remember something from the class, of course, is this experience, but the quote is just something that is embedded within my system just because it ties everything together so well with the work that we're doing, right? And it says that it's not simply what you eat, right? It's the reasons why you're eating it. And it goes back to what Dr. Abarca was saying, right? You know, we eat to form the sense of connection, to remember our past, to be in our present, to form our sense of community or belonging, of forming our identity or growing as a community, of, you know, having these emotional ties, these connective tissues amongst ourselves, even though we're from very different places, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the final thing that I think like is very important to stress is, like, yeah, we've been talking about, you know, belongingness. We mentioned, you know, the culmination of identity. But I think, like, you know, going back to that cliche kind of, you know, belief that maybe through eating we can all, you know, take care of ourselves. But I think one thing that also important through that is that it's the relationship building, right? We build relationships through the food and the discussions that we have. And I think that's a good part of what culinary heritage is, culinary kinship, is the sense of bringing and unifying people. And I think there's more power in that. You know, there's a stronger power to be said towards, you know, issues that are happening in our country and things like that. It's a whole bigger scale. But if we dilute it down to what we're discussing here, it's something as simple as just establishing positive relationships, building who we are, and just appreciating it. And I think more of that in the world kind of would spread towards greater things.
Yeah, and, you know, as we do come to a close, I wanted to close it off with this line by Eliza Licona Southern in Sobremesa, The Real Meal. Let's take a listen to what she has to say.
The ritual and ceremony of food also, not just the dish. One of the main things I've tried to teach them, and I talk about it every time we're together, is sobremesa. La sobremesa is as important as the food. That's when you talk, that's when you look each other in the eye, that's where you remember, and that's where you tell stories.
Right, and I think she mentions what we have been talking about in this conversation, right? It's not just about the food, right? It's about this term that she calls the sobremesa, right? At these moments where we find the connections, these ideas of belonging, of forming who we are as people, but also as people who share a meal, who share a food, who share roti, who share menudo, tamales, or in my case, who share enfrijoladas, right? So I think it's lovely what she has to say about it.
Yeah, I think there was Eliza Licona Southern, whose story is in Apostle Voices website. What she said about the sobremesa is as important as what you eat, as the meal. It really echoes the quote that you just read. It's not so much what of food, but it's the why. Mm-hmm. And the stories that we tell through them, which is all what I've been hearing from your conversation today. Mm-hmm. Are there any last comments that you would like to share before we close today?
I would like to recall those lines which you said, very poetic. So making roti or making any kind of food in a diasporic situation, like, so making roti in El Paso for me is traveling from the kitchen in El Paso to the kitchen in the Himalayas, to the neighborhood, to mother, and to the lap of immense softness.
That's wonderful. That is poetic.
That's lovely.
That is
poetic.
Really,
yeah. That's really
and,
good.
And it raises or it underscores the food, the smells, the taste, the memories that it provokes. It transcends time. It transcends space. And it's grounded in emotions. And that's really what you so beautifully said. I mean, yes. I love that phrase. You know, it connects the kitchen of El Paso to the kitchen of the Himalayas.
Yes.
That is absolutely wonderful. So I hope that we should go and eat some roti soon. Maybe you can make some for us. And we come to your house and we can all eat some roti with tortillas and some frijolitos and
I know,
tamales.
But don't bring the canned menudo, Jake. You got to make it yourself.
It was pretty good. How about I keep you guys on a year-long deployment and then you let me know if the actual can of menudo is good or not.
With that, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I would like to thank once again Anna, Rinoka, and Jake for your experiences and the way you are constructing this notion of belongingness, to think about different ways of how do we belong through our foods and how this connects to the notion of heritage, culinary heritage, and kinship. I would like to invite our audience to think about their own stories and to think about what those stories say about the heritage that the food carries, and to be open and embrace the possibilities of new kinships it can form. With that, I'll say thank you and have a good night. El Paso Food Voices was created by Meredith E. Abarca, Professor of Food Studies and Literature at the University of Texas at El Paso. Produced by Adrian Mesa from UTEP's Creative Studios. To learn more about how food practices, memories, and stories shape a city's history, culture, and its character, please visit us at El Paso Food Voices. Thank you.